This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
All right, let's go. Hello. Hi, everybody. Good morning. Brock and Salt Show. Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, and the Seattle Sports app, plus all the podcast platforms. Mariners win again, another series. That's five in a row, and the last three have been beauties, too, all against teams that are supposed to be pretty darn good. First, it was the defending champion Rangers. Then it was the defending National League champion Diamondbacks and their B problem from last night. And then it was and is the best team in the league so far, the team with the best record, the Atlanta Braves. And, they just... Can I go for a little sweep today? We'll see how that goes. Love the way Scott managed the game yesterday and just said, hey, we're going for it tonight. Yeah, throw Luis an extra inning. Yeah, get my A team of relievers in there. We are going to win this thing, even if it means I've got to use Munoz for five outs. I love it. It's what you should do. That is some great managing. And then today, we'll see what happens. Maybe you get a win, maybe not. But you've done what you were trying to do, what you set out to do, which is win the series. And I'm glad I was there last night. A lot of fun. I brought Cecily, my 10-year-old, and her two friends, which, by the way, very entertaining. One likes baseball. One did not really even know what baseball was.
Oh.
Yeah. Didn't even know.
Well, you said it was Hello Kitty night, so you got some Hello Kitty experience with the girls.
Yeah, they were wearing Hello Kitty ears. As headbands of some sort, little cat ears sticking up out of their head. We got to meet the moose, which was great. And thanks to getting to work here, which is very nice, we had All-Star Club tickets, which was awesome. And so I basically just set two rules for the kids. Just look, you guys can do pretty much whatever you want. Don't get lost. Or, I mean, don't leave
don't
the All-Star Club.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't fall off the ledge. And don't vomit later. Other than that, you can do pretty much whatever you want. They're like, can we have soda? I was like, do you have soda at home? Sometimes. Okay. I don't care. I'm not your parent. Can we have as much ice cream as we want? As long as you don't vomit later. You've got to understand your boundaries, because if you vomit later, you have to tell your parents that it's because you have the flu and not because, Cecily's dad let you eat so much candy.
You know
and
what I had at
ice cream
at
and whatever
10 years
else.
Old? Really strong boundaries on how much ice cream I could eat.
Well, what can I tell you? Those were the rules. And then it led to a lot of questions about other rules. Hey, Mike, can I yell shirt without the R? And I was like, yeah, I guess. If you think there's an appropriate time to do that, you can take the R out of shirt if you need to. I don't care. Yeah, that. Again, okay. I'm not your parent. You can do what you want. Don't vomit. Don't get lost. Don't fall off the balcony. And after that, we had fun. So, very nice night at the ballpark last night. So
you're cool, Dad, is what I'm hearing.
I'm not cool or not cool.
How much ice cream do you want? As much as you want.
I'm just not their parent. Cecily can't do that. She has to eat the right amount of ice cream. No, they were fine. I don't like getting involved in parenting other people's kids. You're 10 years old. If your parents haven't taught you how to be an adult by now, then that's kind of on them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they have that pretty well figured
adult
out.
Adult by now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Did you drive here or not? what's going on? Anyway, they did great. It was a ton of fun. Awesome environment again last night. And it was interesting. People were booing Kelnick. Was that the case two nights ago?
No,
also?
It was not there when I.
God, they booed him every time.
Where I was in the ballpark. I did not hear a chorus of boos that I heard on the broadcast last night.
He got booed every time last night, which I thought was kind of kind of weak. I don't feel any reason to boo Jared Kelnick. And
when he left, there were some fans who probably thought it's hey, dude, how many times do you want to take a shot? We get it. But
I think he really feels like they interrupted a career that was promising and didn't go the way he wanted it to. I got some sympathy for him on that one. I don't know. I don't find myself in any way angry with him. And I actually gave him a little cheer when he made what I thought was one heck of a play down the left field line to Rob. Was that Dylan Moore that he robbed? That was one heck of a play.
Yep.
And then I don't know that you guys could see it on the broadcast, but when they made a pitching change. Yeah, when they brought out, when they took Munoz out, or brought Munoz in for Stanek, he was at second because of the error, non-error on Polanco. And he and Dylan Moore were pushing each other.
Hanging it up.
Oh, yeah. He was. You could see Dylan was quote unquote mad at him. It was pretty funny.
Well, I mean, that also a good adjustment. Wasn't it Dylan Moore that hit one into the corner his at bat before?
I think it was.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a Kelenic adjustment in my mind.
It's just a good play, man. It's just a really, really nice play. In any event, so that was interesting. They were booing Kelenic all night. And I thought it was surprising that this song was ringing throughout the entire building throughout the evening.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, I just thought it was weird. You might not have guessed, but with Luis on the hill, going seven strong shutout innings.
Well, if you were in the All-Star Club, that means you had the soft serve machine at your disposal. Which means, were you holding a bowl of soft serve in the way that you were molding clay?
Yeah, I was molding.
With your hands.
I had a cone upside down in the bowl of soft serve, and I was molding the ice cream around the cone.
Yeah, and they're like, we have a creep in the All-Star Club that we need to get out of here immediately. He won't stop staring at Castillo and playing the song loudly on his phone.
He's stolen these three kids, and now he's staring at Luis Castillo.
He refuses to watch kids who are eating ice cream. And
these kids are cursing up a storm.
They're swearing in the All-Star Club.
I don't know what's going on up there. Yeah. Luis pretty filthy last night, huh?
I mean, is it as good as you've seen him?
No, because that game in Toronto was so freaking absurd a couple years ago in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true.
But short of that, I mean, he was pretty dominant last night. Those games against the Yankees when he first got here were pretty nasty also.
Yep.
But you gotta respect what he did against this lineup. And it's interesting, you and Brock and I are kind of texting at each other last night. And you guys were home watching. I was at the game. You're like, do you bring Luis back out for the seventh? Yeah. And you and I were both totally in agreement. You
know, 100%.
You managed to win this series tonight. You go for the jugular. The moment you've got a chance, you've gotten lucky with a home run from Polanco and you've scored another run, you go for the jugular and try to win this series. And they did. And by the way, Luis comes out for the seventh. He doesn't just get through the seventh. He gets through it on like six, seven pitches, whatever it was. I mean, he just cruised through the inning. It was awesome. And exactly just knows what he needs to do. You guys can you know, call me a Luis suck up all you want, but that's why he's the ace to me, because he knows he's got that in between right now where he still has his good stuff and he now knows how to pitch. And when you combine those two, there's generally only like a couple of years where you get both of those things. Luis is kind of in that zone right now. And he might have some duds the way he did in Toronto a couple of weeks ago, and his first few outings of the season were not Luis-like, and it does sound like he had to have a little meeting with Scott, and Scott reminded him of who he was. And since then, things have been going a whole lot better for Luis Castillo and for the Mariners. But he is in that unique spot where he's veteran enough to know what he's doing, and he still has his good stuff. And that's unique.
It's masterful.
Yeah, you get to see both of it last night. You get to see the good stuff early and knowing how to get through it late.
You know, the Rock, I mentioned it pregame a little bit. You know, he got off to a little bit of a shaky start early in the season because he wasn't putting people away, you know, when he got ahead in the count. And he's a killer. I mean, you have to take that attitude when you're out there. When you get them 0-2, 1-2, I'm killing you. You're done. And we just reminded him of that. That's who he is. And when he does that and he has that mentality out there, he's electric.
I love that line.
He sure is. He's pretty electric. He was awesome last night. 509 does not care for my parenting. That's terrible, Mike. I would not let my kids be under your care. Good. I don't want your kids under my care. I don't want your kids with me. You think I want your kids? Why do you think I'm telling you this right now? I don't want your kids under my care.
Their parents, do you know the parents well? The kids that you're...
No, I don't barely know them at all.
Okay, well, they just found out, I guess.
They don't listen to this. One of them didn't even really know what baseball was. I think I'm pretty safe. So anyway, it's not my job to parent
three
your
rules.
Kids.
Don't fall over the ledge, don't puke, and don't get lost.
I feel like that's excellent parenting. What else are you supposed to do?
Swear if you want to swear.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm not here to teach you whether to swear or not. That's your parents' job. I parent my own kids, and while you're here, don't die, don't get sick, and don't get lost. This feels like a pretty simple thing. All the conservatives out there, this is essentially conservatism.
I would have loved you as my parent.
Less government, less parental intervention. Just go do your thing. We'll come back with everything you need to know, including some of the highlights of a great win, a great series win from last night. It's Brock and Salk, CL Sports on 710CLSports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. up first.
Yeah, you know, the Mariners started the year 6-10. Since then, they've gone 11-3, and they've now won five straight series. The latest came against, well, the team with the best record in baseball, as Atlanta's fearsome lineup has scored a grand total of two earned runs in two games, one of which really should have been unearned. Luis Castillo just dominant yesterday.
Castillo trying to put a capper on this one. The 1-2. Swinging a fly ball, lazy hit. More of a pop fly into shallow right field. Polanco is there, and he makes the squeeze for out number three. Luis Castillo flexes as he walks off the mound. He has flat out handed it to the Braves tonight. Three hits over seven scoreless innings.
I don't like judging. Oh, actually, I do, and I do it probably more than I should. You know what would have been nice? If the crowd had cheered Luis as he walked off the mound last night with the same veracity that they booed Jared Kelnick. Luis was sublime last night. He was awesome.
Very good.
He was clearly coming out of the game in that moment. He gave his big fist pump. He walked slowly. There was cheers. I'm not saying there wasn't anything, but I would have loved to have seen like a thunderous ovation for what he did last night against that lineup. He was awesome. Offensively, it was kind of the Jorge Polanco show.
There goes Rojas, 1-0. Swinging, it's out to right field. Hammer deep. It's back, 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 and over the wall for a home run. Jorge Polanco, number four, puts the Mariners on the board. A two-run blast. 2-0 Mariners.
Yeah, they would get one more, and turns out they needed all three of them as there were some little defensive miscues in the eighth inning that didn't really help matters. Polanco had a non-error play at second base that for my money should be an error, and then they did have an error. Munoz came in, threw the ball away, so it was one of two runs unearned, but it was not pretty. I love the way Scott managed the game. We talked about it earlier. I thought that he did exactly the right thing. Go for the jugular in game two. You know, you've got Hancock set for the finale. So win the series at all costs, which they did. Munoz goes for a 5-out save, first of his career, and then see what happens today. If you win, great. It's gravy. If you lose, no big deal. You've won the series, which is what you set out to do. Gosh, the starters have just been tremendous, right? And so choose your favorite stat. Choose your favorite stat. Here's one I like. I saw this last night from the Mariners. Starting pitchers for this team have now gone 18 straight games without allowing more than two earned runs in a single outing. Forget quality starts. That is hard to process.
It's its own stat.
18 straight games without allowing more than two earned runs apiece. That's just out of control. Cal Raleigh knows they're playing pretty well.
We're playing good baseball right now. We still got a lot to work on, though. You know, we got to keep swinging the bats. We got to get better in that area. But the pitching's really been great this past couple weeks. And we made some great defensive plays today, too. The infield, I was telling Demo, made a great play there on RCA. The ball kicked weird off the mound. And Polo made some great plays tonight. We're not getting them, you know, free outs. So minus the pitcher blunder there, but we don't count them as fielders. So.
He is so, it's like listening to Ryan Divish talk. It's so really, likeable. Really remarkable. Hey, that same guy, Cal Raleigh, going to join us at 8:30 this morning and talk about that pitching staff and talk about what they need to get going with their hitting. We will talk to Cal at 8:30 this morning.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, Seahawks rookies going to start to arrive shortly for their first rookie mini camp. I really like this event. It was fun the last couple of years to get out there and just a good chance to see what they look like in person. Plus, you start to see how they're going to plan to use them in the past. You know, with Pete, this was always an opportunity to implant that message of competition. They had jump balls and other games they would play to instill competition without necessarily having them physically touch each other, since it's all about making sure this is like a hands-off kind of practice. This year, all right, there won't be that, but it's really our first chance to see what Mike McDonald looks like running a practice. So excited to see him in coach mode, not just in press conference mode, because obviously there's a pretty big difference. With the draft now in the rearview mirror, it's time for the grades. Bump and Stacey yesterday talked to Trevor Sikma, who is from Pro Football Focus.
I think it's a B+ because they drafted what they wanted to draft. There were a couple of positions where, okay, you're drafting guys a little bit higher than where I have them valued on my big board. Just overall, they took a lot of guys that were higher in their picks than where I had them on my big board. But really what you want to focus on the most for Seattle are those two selections that they had, Byron Murphy the second and then Christian Hands. I absolutely love both of these picks from them.
I don't know how to process. Well, they picked him before I had them on my big board. Like, okay. Like, that's where you had them. They have to look at it based on the way they had them on their big board. And so I think a B plus is probably a fair grade, whatever. In any event, excited to see some of these rookies in person and see what they look like.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, what do you make of Roger Goodell's proposal? If you guys have spent any time thinking about this, he's suggesting a schedule that puts the Super Bowl on President's Day weekend.
Like it?
Well, I do think that makes some sense for everybody's perspective other than, like, you know, ours. It stinks from a sports radio perspective. It means either we need to come in and work on President's Day or we've got to wait a day. Yeah. Like, the whole thing is a mess from our perspective. Plus, generally, that's kids' school vacation, so a lot of us want to go on vacation that week. In any event, forgetting about the fact that 18 games is at least an even number, I do like that. It does make sense to have the Super Bowl on a day when most people don't have to work the next morning. But can't you just make it on Saturday? Why do you have to move it all the way to a long weekend? Just put it on Saturday. That seems like a much simpler solution to this problem.
You don't have to change the weekend either if you do it that way.
Just put it on Saturday. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
Just move the Super Bowl to Saturday.
Are you in the, if you do 18 games, you got to have two bye weeks crowd?
Yeah, and that's what he's doing in this. Good. Yeah, he is saying there would be two bye weeks because, you know, they care about player safety. Oh, that 100%. Is everything you need to know.
The evidence clearly strongly suggests that's so, what they care about.
Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. A lot of texts in about the parenting. Heck, Salk, I like your rules. That's good parenting. Appreciate that. Salk seemed like there were a lot of Braves fans there last night. Maybe that's the J.K. Love. No, they were booing him, which I didn't really understand. Salk, you can watch my kids anytime. Just let me know when you want to pick them up for the next Mariner game. Yeah, I'm going to get right on that one, I'm sure.
Ice cream, you really want that kid coming home like that?
Right? I love how Scott handled the game. Munoz will get 2 days of rest down today. Scheduled off day tomorrow. Luis is nasty. Ride the hot hands. Get a sweep today. Totally agree. 360. I think that's very, very well said. Scott, there are days where you're going to criticize and days you're going to second guess and days you're going to say, hey, I don't like the way he played that last night. And we'll talk about him, and we do. Last night, that was some pretty good managing. That's exactly the way I wanted him to do it, and he got it done. All right, coming up next, let's get some broader perspective on this pitching staff because what they're doing is in a league of its own. Jeff Passan's got the details coming up on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio, weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Brock and Salk's Rewind is presented by Toyota of Kirkland.
Fun little baseball game last night. Pitcher's duel and Mariners end up on the top end of it. Didn't look like it was necessarily going to go that way as Bryce Miller dominated, but so did Max Fried. And then you give up one run. It looked like, honestly, Brock, I was prepared to come in and say defense was really the story of that game. And people were going to get mad at me and be like, how dare you? Offense, offense, offense. And I was going to say, no, this one to me was all about defense. You had two pitchers that were dominating and Dylan Moore couldn't get to a ball. Unfortunately, it leads to a run. And then an inning later, you know, you have an opportunity to score and give credit to their second baseman, Ozzie Albies, because he made a nice play. He knocked the ball down. He didn't get the out, but he saved a run. And I thought that was going to be the difference in the game. You didn't get to a ball. They did. Instead, Polanco gets a single, and obviously Mitch Garver took care of the rest with a huge blast. So, fun game last night, and these Mariners have been rolling a little bit. Let's talk to Jeff Passan as we do this time every week. Hi, Jeffrey. Good morning.
How are you, gentlemen?
You know, we're really good. I really enjoyed that game. I don't know if you got a chance to watch any of that Mariner game last night, but pitcher's duel, both guys throwing no-hitters into the seventh, and then you end up with a walk-off win. I don't know what else you could ask for from a baseball game.
I mean, the call on it was so good, too. Like, the whole scene, Mitch Garver finally, like, doing something productive. And you know he has it in him, right? Like, you know, even amid the struggling, that there's going to be a few of those moments this year. And that's, you know, I understand he's making real money and the productivity expected of him is something, but on a contending team with a guy of Mitch Garver's ilk, all you need is like four or five big moments where he helps you win a ball game. And that's a dude contributing the way that he needs to.
You know, assuming is always dangerous. So I don't want to assume anything here, but you wrote a book all about the arm. I would assume you love good pitching duels. Is that fair?
The best. Absolutely.
What is a good, amazing, great pitching duel versus, oof, really struggling offenses? How do you characterize the difference?
I think it's easier to do that now. We're able to quantify the stuff better, right?
Mm-hmm.
I also look at Max Fried and Bryce Miller, and I'm like, yeah, that's a pitcher's duel right there. Like, those are when you picture a pitcher's duel, those are like the faces and the arms that come up. In the same way, where when you picture a middle-aged man trying to do something right that he shouldn't, you picture Mike Sauk on the ground with a busted hammy.
Wow. I mean, on the other hand, winning the race, because he was that far ahead that he continued to win even after injuring his hammy, still limped to a victory. So, yeah. I mean, it's cool. Yeah. You can talk trash, but you're yet another hater. You're yet another person who fueled my flame. You're yet another reason why I won this race handily. And my hamstring hurts. That's fine. It was worth it for the victory and shutting up people like you.
Yeah, the thing is, you didn't shut us up. If you had won the race, you would have. You won it with an asterisk or perhaps
how an asterisk?
An ice pack.
What are you talking about? I not only won it, I won it by so much, I limped to a finish.
I know, and that's
I won by
right
so
there.
Much, Jeff, that Maura didn't even show up for work this week.
Yeah, I do agree with that. That was a weak move by Maura, going like running off to the Caribbean.
Yeah, pretty lame. Like,
you can't do that. You can't do that. You gotta go face your tormentor and laugh at him as he limps along.
Yeah.
Because running a lap took so much. I'm sorry, not even a lap, right?
Half a lap.
Yeah.
I was gonna say if you had tried to go a lap, would you have torn the other hamstring too?
Well, probably. And if I had tried to go a whole lap, I probably would have not tried to turn it on the way I tried to, like, go not 0 to 60, but like 30 to 60, or in my case, like, you know, 5 to 8. And unfortunately, the hamstring didn't respond the way you would want it to. All right, this is about baseball, not about my stupid hamstring. Let me play you something. Have you spent any time around Bryce Miller?
No, actually,
I think
have
you
not.
Would really like him. He reminds me, I said this to Brock earlier, of a professional golfer, the way he talks about his game, where it's just very matter of fact.
I'd rather have Jeff not be around him, because when he's around people, he's going to write a story and then the story never materializes.
And then they stink for a while.
Yeah, let's not have Jeff around him.
Uh-uh. It's probably for the best. But he said something after last night's game that I've never heard, and it struck me as being 100% true. Here was Bryce, who pitched so well last night.
Yeah, it's cool. It's, he's a great pitcher. He's been around for a while, so he knows what he's doing. But it's fun. But I have fun whenever we got the lead. But if we got the lead all game, we can't hit a walk off. So it's fun either way. It's a fun game.
I love that idea. If you have the lead, you can't hit a walk off.
Yeah, I'd rather have the lead.
But isn't that part of what makes baseball fun? Like, yeah, you can't get that joy unless you also have to experience the frustration and lack of faith that comes with failure leading up to it.
Yeah, I think that is legitimate. My favorite part of the walk-off was the bat toss. Mm. It was just, couldn't you sense with Mitch Garver that he was just like trying to release all of that frustration. Yeah. It wasn't like a spike. It was just like it wasn't a gentle toss either. It was almost like a relief toss. And because everyone else has been playing so well, pitching especially, that I think he really felt like he needed to not validate himself, because he knows how hard the game can be, but just to be part of it, like when everyone else is doing cool things, you want to be a part of it. And the Mariners are doing very cool things right now.
Yeah, and it starts with their pitching. I mean, their pitching is just on historic runs. It seems like every night, Jeff, the Mariners PR team sends out numbers in the box score, and it's like, yeah, never been done. Yep, you know, back tied with the – I mean, it's just a ridiculous run. And we were talking a little about this yesterday. Castillo, Logan, George, and Bryce last night, as you said, I mean, absolutely filthy. I mean, those first three are ones. Aren't those first three guys all capable of being aces on just about anybody's staff in baseball?
Yes. We can get into the discussion of what makes a one, and that's going to take a long time because my definition of a one is a little bit different. But for the purposes of the generally accepted definition of what a number one starter in baseball is, they've got three, and they might have four now.
Yeah, so what I mean, that's really remarkable to think about, and we haven't even seen Brian Wu yet. And oh, by the way, Emerson Hancock is just racking up quality start after quality start.
He's been perfectly. I'll say this: earlier this week, it was before I think it was on Sunday before I went on to Baseball Tonight. I wanted to understand just how good the Mariners pitching had been. So I went to Fangraphs and punched in like a date calendar, like, you know, select statistics by date. And I was sorting it by ERA, and I kept going back a day. And the ERA over like the previous 8 days was 1-something, 9 days, 1-something, 10 days, 1-something, 11 days, 1-something, 12 days. And it kept like getting lower. And so I went back and looked, and I have not updated this since last night. So I don't know, but I went and looked back, and I think it was over the previous, I think it was over a 12 game stretch.
Yeah. 20
the
runs.
Mariners had like, it was 11 runs in 10 games. At one point, it was I think it was like a 1.11 ERA. And I went and looked at that stretch. And historically, like since the turn of the century, I think only two other teams had done it. And it was a Giants team that won a World Series, and it was an Astros team that won a World Series.
Dumb question, but turn of which century?
I mean, this past one.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Baseball goes back all the way to the last one, basically, so I wasn't sure.
Yes, but that would bring us into the dead ball era when, you know, putting up 10 games, giving up like 8 runs was a very regular thing. And just so you don't, like, just so I'm not, like, trying to make you feel dumb, I actually did the search going all the way back then and was like, oh, okay, you moron, you probably should have realized that. So now I'm just going to foist the moronhood on you, adding insult to your busted hamstring, which you got because you're old and can't run.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch the video of that?
No, I tried to, but I didn't want to give Mike the click.
That's fair. Yeah, I can buy that. Hey, let's come back to this rotation because it's been so much fun. What do you do? So Brian Wu had a second start. Rehab start was great. He's got a third one coming up, supposed to throw 85 pitches. They said after that they'll make a decision. Let's say you even go one more after that just because there's no rush and you really want to make sure. I know these things tend to work themselves out. They always do. And so this is probably a conversation we don't really need to have. But what do you think about doing? Because they don't want to use a 6-man rotation. Brian Wu, I don't think you have any interest in putting him in the pen because he's never done it before. And that would be a huge, huge risk with his arm. Although obviously Matt Brash now is, we don't know where that's going. What do? You just send Hancock down?
I think the discussion is, do you send Hancock down and let him, you know, remain stretched out and throwing innings, or do you explore the possibility of keeping Emerson Hancock up as a 3-plus inning reliever who, if need be, you could stretch right back out, but a guy who can, if not allow you to save your bullpen, then certainly pitch like productive leverage innings. You just don't see guys go through like relief pitchers go through the order one time. But I would like to see that from a relief pitcher. I would like to have somebody there who I know if my starter goes six innings, maybe I put Emerson Hancock out there for three and let him throw 50 pitches and keep him as stretched out as possible while producing the way that, again, because, you know, we need that. Like, I understand the Mariners' bullpen has been extraordinarily good so far, right? But I don't know. I love the idea of the long reliever who's not a mop-up reliever. It's just a dude who can go out and shove and do so in wins, so you don't have to go the traditional, you know, seventh inning setup guy closer every time you get a good start.
Jeff, we talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago about the Houston Astros and how they found a market inefficiency, right? And some of the older pitchers from the Dominican and just the fruit that has borne. I'm curious, when the rest of the league looks around at the Seattle Mariners and says, young ace, young ace, young ace, oh my gosh, how did they go about doing this? How do they go about developing a staff that is the envy of just about everybody in baseball, especially with the youth of these guys all coming up together? When others study the Mariners, was there a market inefficiency? Was it an eye for scouting? Is there a key to their development? What do you think they find when they study the Mariners, like we talked about with the Astros?
I think what they see is guys who can develop players well. And I don't know that player development is a market inefficiency. I think it's a process, and the Mariners do process about as well as any other team. I think they do process in their draft really well, and it's why they've been able to identify guys like Cole Young and like Colt Emerson and like Johnny Farmello, you know, guys who weren't as appreciated perhaps by other organizations and other organizations' draft models. And, you know, they put them into the organization then, and they have player development people. And I think the Mariners do really well is project what a guy can be. That's a hard thing to do, guys. It's a really hard thing to do. But it's not just in the case of George Kirby, who's a first-round pick, and Emerson Hancock, who's a first-round pick. It's taking Bryce Miller and Brian Wu a little bit later. And even a guy like Logan Evans, who I don't know if he's the next really good Seattle Mariners starter, but I'll say this. He was, what was he, like an I think it was like a 12th-round pick last year, and he's a double A already with a sub-2 ERA.
Yeah, does that also extend to what they've done with some of these relievers as well? And first it was Paul Sewald and those guys, and now, I don't know if you've watched Cody Bolton, it'd be weird if you have, but like they've recreated Justin Topa again.
I know. I'm telling you, process is such a boring thing to hear about and think about, but they do it really, really well. They just do. And the thing about process to me, when I begin to mention it, when asked why teams are winning, it takes a while. You don't like earn your process bona fides within 1 year. This is just this is something that they've done multiple years now with the bullpen guys, and you've seen it with the drafting, with the player development. You know, I asked somebody with the organization, what is it that you guys do best? And his answer was process all the way, because they have figured out things that work, but they're not married to them to the point where if it doesn't start to work or if it doesn't work anymore, that they're going to be, I think St. Louis, for example, fell into that trap. it's the cardinal way or nothing. Well, what happens when everyone else evolves and the cardinal way doesn't do as well as it used to? Are you able and willing to evolve with it? And St. Louis has not done so to the extent that they've needed to, and they've fallen behind because of it. I think the Mariners are, I think they're a smart organization because they are extremely process-oriented, but they are not married to these ideals that they've developed in the course of making these players as good as they are. They just know that's what's working now and what's been working for them.
How evergreen is your Julio article?
Very.
Is it going to hit well enough for us to see it at some point? I mean, like, it's becoming kind of a question. I know it's only April 30th, so no one is panicked. Certainly not me, but one home run. He's starting to hit a little bit, which is nice. I mean, seeing him in and around 275. But there's just been a lot of these big moments and a lot of swing and miss. A lot of punches. Yeah.
A lot of punches.
What do you think's going on?
Baseball.
Yeah. That's all we're going to get? Just baseball? Jeff's quiet?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm beginning to feel like it was a mistake to talk about the story because every time I log on to social, where's the Julio story? Every time Sarah Lang is tweeting about Julio hitting 4-something, 5-something, something of the last 10 games. Uh-huh. Mariners fans are like, oh, what are you passing? Where's Julio saying? Here's the thing. I don't blame him. I don't blame him. This is entirely self-inflicted.
Yeah.
And so this one word answer is my acknowledgement that I'm the turd in this situation and that I made a mistake.
Uh-huh.
And it's my mistake coming back to roost and me realizing that and going into a show.
Because I think if you go back and listen, you were so giddy. Remember how giddy he was about the article? So, I mean, so giddy.
Yeah, there were new anecdotes that nobody had ever heard before.
Right.
Now, is that stuff you pick up sitting front row at WWE events? What's up with that?
What do you think about that? What's up with that?
Well,
Is that you sneering at me?
No, I've been to one wrestling event in my life. I didn't have quite the same level of tickets. So questions. One, did you use your connections to get those tickets or did you buy them outright?
Use my connections.
Absolutely. 100%. Okay, good. That's what I wanted to hear. Good. Did you go straight to Nick Khan?
No, I did not go to Nick Khan. For those who watch wrestling, Michael Cole is the legendary play-by-play guy, has been doing this for decades now. What people don't know is Michael Cole is an insane Mets fan and a hilarious Mets fan because whenever the Mets are not winning, here's the thing. I have a lot of friends who are like Mets fans. Michael Cole is the most insane of all of them. The texts that I get from him are so funny and so angry and so self-loathing. He turned around like a match was going on last night, and he turned around and looked at me, and he's like, "You see, Severino's got a no-hitter during the match." And by the end, like, they're in commercial break, and I tap him on the shoulder. I was like, Swanson broke it up, and he looks at me. He's like, "They're going to lose this game." And they did. They went and lost the game. And by the end of the night, I texted Cole and Pat McAfee. I was like, "Boy, this is such a great night. Thank you for doing this for me."
That's cool.
And my kids. My kids had such an awesome time. And Cole's response is, "I'm done with the Mets."
Did you guys make signs?
No, we did not.
Lame.
We wanted to, but the fact that we were sitting where we were sitting,
respect.
I didn't want to be hanging over the heads of the people who everyone's actually tuning in to look at with a sign that says Jeff Passan is here, which is what it was going to be.
Oh, that would have been pretty good, actually. I would have given you some props for that one. That would have been great. All right, Jeffrey, we got to go. I got to go ice my hamstring. Obviously, it's been a big part of my life here for the last almost week. Just a lot of ice, yeah, rest,
was,
ice.
You know what, though? It was so worth it, though. It was so worth it because at the end of the day, you can say I won walking away.
Yeah,
and that's something in a race. I'm just disappointed in Mara.
As you should be.
Track star and lost to you. Like, did your dad come out and help like walk you to the finish line?
I'm done with you. I am going to send you the video. You can see it for yourself. I will. You'll have to just be one of the clicks. You can see the video, and maybe someday when you're here, you and I will have to race, and that'll just hurt myself again. Whatever.
I know. I was going to say, you're going to lose to a guy who broke his back. Yeah. It's not great.
360 texts in, says, hamstrings are temporary. Banners hang forever. So I guess we'll leave it on that note. Jeffrey, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, man.
Cheers, boys.
Yeah. We may race one day, but it's going to have to be a while because this thing's not healing well enough for me to get out there and do that anytime soon. So we'll a little more rest, a little more ice, a little more elevation, Justin.
In the training room.
Yep, hitting the training room. Thinking about getting a Theragun. What do you think about those things?
I have it, and I strongly recommend
it. You have a real Theragun fake one? Do you need a real one? Because difference in price is pretty astounding.
I don't think you need a real one.
The fake ones are like $40. The real ones are like $200-$300.
I think mine was like $80 maybe.
Okay.
But for sure, I think you
need a Theragun. Especially, I really need one?
Honestly, especially if you do a lot this summer,
yeah,
the amount I'm assuming you're going to be doing of golfing, or if you're out running at all, like, I love it for a bounce back.
I think I just need a Theragun. Yeah. I think, like, I'm just going to have to get on Amazon. I'm just going to have to get this done later today. I mean, it feels like almost like a mandatory event. All right, Mariners win again last night. They didn't just win. They won a series, guys, against the Braves after beating the Diamondbacks, after beating the Rangers. What's going on here? Brock's in next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.